This episode of the Popcast is brought to you by these sponsors.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Popcast. This is an ancient and powerful open source dragon, open source hacker for the Azure Office of the CTO. This is Ava Black. Welcome to the Popcast, Ava Black.
Hey, thanks for having me, Dan.
Pleasure to have you on. Yeah, we've been planning this for a while, so it's good that we finally got to do this. So let's talk about, like, you know, your journey and, you know, how you got started all the way to where we are now.
Sure. I guess I started tinkering with computers as a kid. My mom worked in a physics department in university, so I had kind of early access to look at software in like the early 90s.
And then, where did you grow up?
I guess that part of my childhood was Southern California, like Los Angeles, Santa Barbara, that strip. Mm-hmm. And I got into college at UC Santa Barbara, physics first and then comp sci. And then I got an offer from a startup. So I kind of just dropped out of college, no degree club, so I started working in a .com doing like video games and game streaming and media, peer-to-peer media streaming in 99. That kind of got me started on open source. Like, we were using CVS and TickleTK.
What kind of games did you play growing up? I mean, going into the gaming industry, what were your kind of favorites?
Back then, you know, one of my earliest favorites was this, I think it was called Solaris 2 on the Apple IIe. I've never been able to find it since then. But other than that, things that I can still find today, like Doom and Quake, Rocket Launcher Arena was a lot of fun. Really loved Unreal. Unreal was sort of my first experience modding a game.
Yeah, we used to have like, I actually set up like a LAN in my old apartment. I used to live in Jersey City. All my friends are like, oh, we're going to play Unreal. And we, you know, we had all the mods, you know, we're playing like as like the, you know, the He-Man characters, was the beast, you know, like the Beastmaster and stuff like that. But I literally, it was just like hooking up just a bunch of like a switch and a bunch of computers together. And we all played this one.
Yeah, totally.
It's great. And then, so again, this whole like gaming thing, the streaming thing, you're like, okay, you know, physics and getting into comp sci, but how does this kind of translate into like eventually where we got into like OpenStack and all of that?
Sure. I took a break after that startup, lived in Germany for a while, studied East Asian religions for a while, some on my own, some in college. And then I got back into tech with MySQL in like 2003. Got involved upstream with MySQL community by 2005. And, you know, so OpenStack actually grew out of the same people who did MySQL. A bunch of the MySQLers ended up at Rackspace doing a project called Drizzle. It's a cloud, sort of cloud first database. And I worked with them on that. And then we all pivoted to OpenStack.
So we have a shared kind of history, right? And, you know, again, we talked about this. So I used to be at HP Helion, right? And it was funny because like there was, you know, Ironic and there was Altnova, Neutron, all of those projects. Yeah. And this was like my first foray out of like an investment software company. I'm like, I want to do stuff in the cloud. So OpenStack was there. And, you know, you were like, you know, a tech lead. You were big, you know, for that thing. Can we talk about kind of that, you know, that, sure. that time? Yeah.
Yeah. I found it ironic. So let's start with an apology to the world for that. Like, the name is, you can blame me for the name and all of the pain that comes with Metal Cubed and everything that uses ironic these days. I'm sorry. Also, you're welcome.
And so, like, what was the impetus? Like, again, it was like, what was the problem you were trying to solve early on? Yeah. Again, it's like, we know where we are now, but like, you know, talk to me about that problem you were trying to solve early.
Yeah. The initial seed of a whole bunch of work was, hey, clouds are really good at like automating stuff, right? You can describe your infrastructure as code, but deploying a cloud itself is this really manual, complicated process. What if we could use the same tools to deploy our virtual infrastructure to actually manage our physical infrastructure? And from that thesis, four of us sort of got together and divided up the work that would have to happen. And we each picked up a chunk of it. I picked up the hardware automation. How do we make this, you know, the same capability as a hypervisor, but no hypervisor? You're using IPMI and Pixie or ILO or iDRAC or, you know, whatever to manage the actual hardware and lay down an operating system without a hypervisor. And so that's sort of the genesis of the Nova bare metal driver, which I then spun out of Nova to make Ironic as a top level project, and Bifrost and everything else that came from that.
That's incredible. Like I said, it's kind of these diverging paths and seeing, like, you know, OpenStack. I think a lot of people tried to correct things that OpenStack didn't do right in Kubernetes, because, like, okay, we've once bitten, twice shy. It was like, let's correct these things and stuff like that. But again, you gotta give props to OpenStack for kind of laying the groundwork for a lot of, like, community engagement to a certain degree. That, you know, and I know you're kind of, which stuff you do with the code of conduct, you're very much into ethics. Can we talk about that just during the scope of your career, how ethics played a part in your kind of journey?
Part of that, I want to actually take one step back in conversation and say, even everything OpenStack did was built on the learnings of the Debian and Ubuntu communities and the MySQL community. And those were built on the successes and failures and foibles of previous communities. So we're all just sort of passing the baton forward to the next generation of projects and leaders. And Kubernetes is no exception. We're today passing on that baton from Kubernetes to the next generation of open source projects, like Wasm, and I don't know what else is cool. You tell me.
eBPF? Oops.
Oh, yeah, that's cool too. Yeah, yeah, so, I haven't dug into eBPF yet, but it looks pretty rad. So ethics. I guess I did a brief stint, 2 years or so in college, studying the Dharma and philosophy and ethics. And I got really, really fascinated by trying to read seminal texts in the original language. So I learned German to read Kant and Nietzsche, and I learned Chinese to try and read, like, the Tao Te Ching and other works. And I picked up Sanskrit to try and read some of the old sutras. And that, I don't know. Yeah, I love cultures and I love different ways of looking at things and trying to find a commonality to how we all rationalize being human together, and how we experience that. These days, I'm focusing a lot on consent as a tool socially to structure our interactions.
So talk to me more about, like, that the whole consent aspect of it. So, like, give me a practical example of that.
Practical example of consent. Okay, so little kids, right? I wasn't taught this very much growing up, but I know parents today who are friends of mine and teaching their kids that they have bodily autonomy. The kid should be able to express consent when receiving a hug or a pinch on the cheek, that they can have a boundary, and that where the boundary is, and how to express that safely.
Got it. Okay. So again, just kind of for the folks listening, I just wanted to kind of give this the example there. So, because, you know, I understand the concept of consent, and now, like, you know, having a practical example is good to kind of, you know, frame it. So go ahead.
I was going to say, I could offer a second one that's more sort of tangible for tech community if you want.
Sure. Go ahead.
Consent to information sharing, right? Whether that's with an ad company that's, like, doing, you know, a tracking pixel on your phone or your browser, you didn't really consent to that. Maybe your consent was co-opted because you couldn't use the website for your bank without it. Or, you know, doxing online is clearly a violation of consent about where your information is shared.
Got it. So there you go. There's a lesson today from the ancient and powerful open source dragon, Ava Black. So again, let's continue on your journey and, you know, kind of got sick of doing the OpenStack thing. Kind of want to know, like, how we got to the next phase.
Okay. So some burnout happened. I think I was wearing four hats at HP at that time. IBM offered me what sounded like a sweet gig, go retool a bunch of their infrastructure to use OpenStack. Then they scrapped the whole project 6 months after I joined. And then I jumped into a startup, a Canadian-based cloud hosting company running OpenStack for folks all over the world, mostly small service providers, telecoms. And did that for about 2 years. and then needed a real break from tech. Some stuff happening in my life made that timing pretty good. And then things kind of took a turn for the, I don't want to say the worst, I'll say the more challenging. It took me about 2 years to get back into tech. Still doing open source, but not OpenStack anymore.
Got it. And so I kind of want to try to understand, you know, again, it's, you know, you burnt out and you were like, look, there's things that are happening with me that I, you know, want to finally kind of address, you know. So, and that's probably like a really bad like phrasing for it, but you know what I mean? Like, talk to me about like, look, there's some things that like are not allowing me to be my true self.
Yeah. So it's a difficult space to talk about sometimes because there are, we feel expectations. We feel pressure from other people to behave or look or be a certain way. And as the VP of a company, functionally a CTO, like my job was flying around and talking to customers, representing our tech, managing the engineering staff. My teams were great, but our customers weren't in the US. They were in very different cultures where it would have been hard enough to be just a woman in that role, and even harder in that role to come out and transition.
Right.
And my community here in Seattle has been mostly fantastic and amazing. They all try super hard, even the ones that are like, I'm not sure what pronouns should I use? How should I address you? They're trying. But I can't say the same for the whole world. So I needed to find a role that was a little closer to home and more supportive. Well, and Kubernetes is part of that coming back to tech for me. Everyone here has been amazing.
That's again, it's some of the inclusive aspect of what we do in this community. That's what I love about it. And it's also like making the world aware of, you know, these type of things like pronouns. Like I said, when I had Holden on, you know, we talked about that. Right. And it's just like, yeah, I want to get your pronouns right. Like, you know, I want to make a conscious effort to say, is it, you know, is it they, is it, you know, for somebody, is it the she, is it he, it's, you know, is it they, I want people to understand how to do that as well. Because like, I didn't know this coming into, like, I didn't know like how this works. And it's just, it's being respectful of somebody and being respectful of where, you know, where they are and what they, you know, what they've accomplished and, you know, where they want to be with themselves. So I think that's just, you know, I applaud you for that, you know, in general. Vivo is an alternative to the big hyperscale cloud providers. They've launched the world's first managed Kubernetes service powered exclusively by K3S. With sub-90-second cluster launch times, a simplified Kubernetes experience, and predictable billing, Sivo is on a mission to create a better developer experience. Get $250 free credit to get started. Sign up today at sivocloud.com/popcast. That's CIVO.com/POPCAST. Go check them out. What if you could build like big tech? Use the same powerful infrastructure that they spent engineering centuries building. It's actually possible now with CockroachDB. The founders have spent the last 8 years creating a cloud-native distributed SQL database that provides the consistency, ultra-resilience, data locality, and a massive scale for modern cloud applications, tech that was once only available to the likes of Google, Facebook, and Netflix. Check them out and get started for free at cockroachlabs.com/popcast. That's CockroachLabs.com/POPCAST. Check them out. So let's continue down our tech journey. Cause you know, all right.
Sounds good.
So you're like, look, you know, we went to this Canadian kind of company and they were like, look, I kind of want to do something else. I kind of want to, you know, talk to me. Like you'd had that burnout and they were like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and read all these different like ancient texts in languages. I'm going to kind of get through this step because if I'm looking at this, like as an outsider kind of looking in, it's like, you really wanted to kind of just reset and go, you know, and kind of just understand your brain more in general to go to this, like, yeah, you know what, these are things I want to do with my life. And now, like, you know, I'm going to do the things that I want to do. Right. So
I've been really fortunate to have a couple breaks from tech. All right. After my first job is when I took like a 2-year break and studied the Dharma and all of that. And then I guess that was like 2002. Around 2010, I took another break. I had a really sweet consulting gig that didn't take a lot of time. And I got to spend another year and a half studying the Dharma, and my bills were taken care of. And then I was burned out after like 7-8 years of nothing but work. And so in, I guess that was 2018, had the space to finally go to DEF CON. Like, I've been going to Burning Man for years, and that was sort of my reason for never making it to DEF CON. They're always too close together. And I made it to DEF CON and met a bunch of awesome folks there, and super welcoming and great and smart and now good friends. And finally stopped putting off admitting that I've been working in security for a long time. So, yeah.
So, okay. So that brings us to the, you know, the open source hacker job at Azure, Office of the CTO, yeah. Right? And that's where we are now. So tell me about like what you do there now.
Try to make open source more secure. Gently nudge product teams or open source projects, or support folks who have ideas that I think will help the ecosystem. So I'm kind of have my fingers in a bunch of different places right now, trying to figure all this out. I actually have a talk coming up at the Supply Chain Security Conference on this, on the survey of the landscape, because so much work is happening across the industry. It's too much for anybody to be involved in all of it. Hopefully by giving folks a sort of an overview, I can help anyone navigate to where they can find the most value given the amount of time they can put in.
So we'll have a link to that. This will probably air after the KubeCon. And so we'll have a link to the software supply chain. And again, your talk, and there is a bunch of talks, which brings us to my next question. Software supply chain is probably the hottest topic in everywhere. I mean, you know, it's like a lot of, you know, we know like some folks from like Google, you know, some people from Microsoft, everyone's, you know, we're in the, you know, the reference architecture talks for tag security. So we talk about this all the time. You did a great presentation on like Gitbomb and stuff like that. So talk to me about how does one protect themselves from, and, you know, have what are some things they can do to have a secure software supply chain?
Gosh, I wish I had an easy answer. Everyone right now wishes they had an easy answer. And frankly, there isn't one right now. I know companies are going to, call it my crystal ball. People are going to try and sell the easy answer to this, because everybody needs an answer, right? The Biden executive order kind of mandated that we have an answer to this by next year. So everyone's in a rush to get there. I think Gitbomb closes a really critical piece of that information gap to allow a user or consumer of open source to understand in detail the entire tree of dependencies, of everything that went into the document they downloaded or the executable they downloaded or, you know, whatever Python package they just installed. That Python package has dependencies, and they have dependencies, and they have dependencies. Right now, none of the tools are really good at walking that whole tree. Some tools do, and tools are getting better, and I don't know all of them. But that's sort of the angle I'm taking, is how do we make that easier for everybody?
Check out What the F is Cloud Native Virtual Conference, November 4th. Join Container Solutions to see how people, processes, and tech make for successful cloud native journeys. Check it out.
This month's podcast sponsor is StormForge. StormForge's Kubernetes performance testing and optimization platform is the easiest way to ensure your applications behave the way you want them to, while cutting out unnecessary resources and time spent manually tuning. In alignment with this, StormForge is asking for your help reducing the amount of unused cloud resources, making both a financial and environmental impact in the world today. We want you to help make that impact with us. So visit https://stormforge.io/podcast. That's stormforge.io/podcast. To learn more about how you can help erase cloud waste and take the cloud waste pledge. While you're there, try out the free tier of the machine learning backed service to start saving resources and getting better performance today.
And so, you know, one of the things too is, you know, you're also obviously a couple of things is you're in the OSI, it's the open source initiative, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so talk to me a little bit about just for the listeners out there, like what is that and, you know, how to get involved there.
Yeah, so the Open Source Initiative is the 501c3 nonprofit that stewards the definition of what is open source as a legal term, both for copyright law and for trademark and patent law. Like, what is open source? What is not open source? And so there are 10 principles that define for any given software license. If it meets these 10 principles, it can be considered an open source license. And then part of what the OSI board does is review licenses when folks propose them to say, hey, we'd like this to become an approved or an OSI approved license that says, yes, stamp, that's open source. There's a body that actually reviews those proposals to approve or deny them.
Got it. How long have you been involved in that? And like, is this
just joined?
Just joined? No, is this go back joined. To your like ethics kind of, you know, this is where you kind of wanted to do more from that perspective?
A little bit. Okay. Yeah. I mean, maybe you've seen some Twitter chatter on ethics and open source. That conversation has been happening for a while and I've been chatting and chiming in with folks and I've been around a couple of different open source foundations, probably since I joined OpenStack. Around that time, so close to 10 years now, as Microsoft actually being like directly involved in one as of a month ago. So don't ask me too many questions. Like I'm new, figuring my way out around on the board and what all we're doing.
Learn how to operationalize Open Policy Agent at scale with Styra. To get started, go to the link at https://hubs.ly/H0PNKM20.
Teleport allows engineers and security professionals to unify access for SSH servers, Kubernetes clusters, web applications, and databases across all environments. You can download Teleport right now at goteleport.com. That's GOTELEPORT.com. So we'll do like a follow-up a year from now and we'll talk about like, we'll just do it on that. Okay, cool. See, I already lined up another guest. See, that's how I operate. All right. So, okay, let's talk about C-Cubed or Confidential Computing Consortium. Can like, talk to me about that. Sure. Cause that's how I kind of, like, I knew of you on Twitter, we've interacted, but that's where I was like, wow, Ava is awesome. Like this is where, like, I always thought you were awesome, but just seeing you in action, I was like, that is so cool. So let's talk about that.
Did you come to the, you did come to the Confidential Computing Developer Summit, C2DS, that I hosted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was, honestly, that was my first time like putting on an entire conference. It was so much fun. So the consortium overall is dedicated to building industry collaboration and open source around the protection of data integrity, data confidentiality, and code integrity. Those are the three key properties of confidential computing. And doing that in a way that is based on or rooted in hardware that differentiates it from polymorphic encryption, which is all software based. It's like the next level from using a TPM, like the Keyline project uses TPMs to build a root of trust. Identity management, it's like the next level of that, actually run all your workload inside an isolated environment that the host has no access to.
Got it. How does one get involved with this?
The foundation or like using the tech?
Either. this is for everybody to know how to get involved with these different things.
If you want to get involved with the Confidential Computing Consortium, we have a Slack instance, a bunch of mailing lists, kind of like the CNCF. It's managed a little differently, but in principle, it's the same. It's another Linux Foundation sub-project. So come on over, join. We'd love to have more folks. In terms of the tech, there isn't a single central product like Kubernetes in the CNCF. There's a, I think we're at eight, maybe like six right now, of projects that are part of that foundation. Open Enclave, Veracruz, Occlum, a bunch of others. And so if you want to help, you know, use the code or write some code, jump in the projects, they're all going to have a different way to contribute. I can't tell you like where to find their Slacks, but.
So we'll have links to the main sites and the main ways to get it and interact with these various things. Before I ask my last question, how does somebody find out more about you? Do you have like a website or whatever, kind of like the shamelessly plug, which we'll also have in the liner notes of the episode? But
totally have a brochure website, like my virtual business card, ava.online. Again, never let me name things.
It's great. So let me ask you the last question here. What work are you most proud of, Ava?
Ooh. There's a lot of things that I've done that I feel like a good sense of accomplishment for. And I think today it still is ironic, knowing that that has helped universities and nonprofits like CERN, the Particle Accelerator in Europe, cancer research centers at universities in the US and Australia, like do really good science for the world with a much lower budget, because education is so underfunded these days. I've had folks come up to me at conferences and be like, we've got all this hardware that was donated to our university and we couldn't use it because it needed, a whole bunch of staff to fix it and run it and manage it. And then we found Ironic. And now like three grad students are running this huge cluster doing cancer research. My heart just is so happy with that.
Incredible. Well, my heart is so happy to have had you on the show after so many months of us talking and being pals and stuff like that. So I appreciate you being on the show, Ava Black.
Thanks so much for having me, Dan.